Hey everybody, this is James Steensma, and I would like to thank you for joining me for the very first episode of The Art of Letting Go. So what is this podcast all about, anyway? The art of letting go, for me, is something that I've yet to attain. It deals with the notion that there are things beyond our control that we sometimes still harbor resentments about, we harbor feelings about, and much like the analogy of harboring things in a port of some type, the water that's underneath it is constantly moving, but yet we are stuck. And I find myself sometimes also stuck. I will admit to you that I am an addict of not only emotional relationships, but also having dependency on prescription drugs in the past. I pause slightly when I say that because it is very hard for someone to admit their vulnerabilities and then to allow a listener who may or may not be foreign to me to be able to step into my circle of trust that I've worked hard over 49 years to establish is something rather new. But I believe everyone has a story. And if you'll stick with me on this journey, perhaps you and I together can figure out the art of letting go. So I suppose I should start with a few ground rules for myself. I have been known to be an oversharer. My family, my friends, my students all have had to suffer through my constant ramblings. And a few have encouraged me to do a podcast so that maybe I can start letting go of some of this oversharing. So I will do my very best, and I promise you, the listener, to not overshare as much as I might like to, but to try to stick to just the facts. Now, here's the reality. As an emotional addict, as someone who seeks approval from others, I'm probably going to overshare. Okay? So we'll put that out there. But at the same time, it's my hope that I don't bore you. Because as an emotional addict, that would be absolutely terrible, wouldn't it? So here's the trick. I am a self-diagnosed addict, and that can be a very dangerous ideal. But I can also tell you that in my life, I've been fortunate to work with enough individuals to see certain patterns happen. And I have sought help for especially these ills, if you will, and the things that hold me back from letting go. But what are the things that I need to let go? Because some of those things not only have helped shape and mold me, but they continue to help me identify as the person I am. Now, I'm not some psychoanalyst or anything like that, but I'm not a dummy. And I know that there are healthy ways to go about doing things. I think I've come to a point in my own life where I have realized that the healthy things have certainly helped advance me, whether it's in my careers or in my personal relationships. But more times than not, I am a self-saboteur. I'm somebody who gets in my own way more than anybody else does. And over the last several years, especially, I find that admitting those faults, at least to those who are closest to me, has some sort of cathartic feeling. There is this letting go in the moment that seems to help me. But those feelings come back. And I don't let them go. I don't let go of the things I cannot control. Because I am convinced that at the end of the day, I can control everything. There's the old saying that I wrote the book on it. But I did. Okay, I didn't actually. But if you were to ask me, I'd tell you I did. Because my ability to control my outcome seems to be ingrained in me. So is my ability to manipulate my story. And so that's another parameter I'll set for you. I will not manipulate my story. I don't need to. I don't need to try to play upon somebody's emotions, because it's hard enough to have walked through my own life than to try to make you somehow sorry for me having done so. But let's get to that. I believe it's healthy to always ask why. It's one of those defining questions that we blame two-year-olds for asking. And we want them to just go away and leave us alone. Stop asking me why, little one, before I spank your bottom, or I put you in a corner, or whatever your mode of discipline is. But here I am at 49 still asking why. Now, there is a difference between saying why and why me. And I think there's a healthy difference between doing so. Asking why, for me, has always been something that's allowed me to help figure out next steps. If I understand why something is happening, then I know how to either address the situation or how to avoid it in the future. Make sense? But if I spend time asking why me, I never get on with the process of living. I get stuck. And so I don't ever say why me. And again, I believe that you can honestly ask those closest to me, and they will tell you the same. I've never taken the time to sit back and throw pity parties for myself. Certainly, I've had emotional outlets. I've had a good cry or two, probably in the last week. Who knows? There are things that affect me, but I never say, why me? And I never finish it with the word Lord, because I don't think that that's what God's purpose is. I think that it's those situations that we bring upon ourselves in some cases. But again, it's those things that we can't control, that we should let go of, that seem to be the hardest for me. In all areas except for my health. Now, this first episode is being recorded on October 3rd, 2020, the worst year for most of us in whatever time span that we've lived. 2020 has been a grab bag of mixed emotions for me, and it's certainly been the reason I believe today, of all days, I've decided to start this podcast. October 3rd is known as World Ostomy Day. Now, it's also known as a few other things. I think it's known as Happy Boyfriend Day and so on and so forth, but thankfully for me, those don't apply. Ostomy does apply. I have an ileostomy, and it's not my first. So let's dive in, and I'll tell you just a little bit of background about how this came about. When I was 14, I started to get very ill, very sick, when I would seem to eat dairy. Okay. And many of you have heard or experienced the idea of lactose intolerance. It's certainly not a new condition, and we learn to deal with it. We learn to avoid things like ice cream and, oh my, cheese. I'm a cheeseaholic, people. Even at 14, I loved cheese. So I had to avoid those milk sugars, the lactose, or bad things would happen. Stomach cramping to the point where you wished death upon yourself just to get over the cramping. I would start many mornings, like many people that I knew, especially classmates, with a bowl of cereal. I mean, we read the back of the box of cereal as we were eating from it. And I would know that, okay, if I didn't slow down my milk consumption, I was going to be in for a very bad day. Many times it would happen before school started. And this affected me for years. all the way to the age of 21. But there was something happening around the age of 18 when I became a senior. As the year started, I was tipping the scales at about 180 pounds, 185 pounds, which was rather large, especially for a teenager, only 5'9" tall. But as the year went on, I had somehow shed somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 to 50 pounds. And here's the real kicker. I didn't try. It started to come out in ways that would never be considered healthy. For me, I chose to ignore those signs. By the time I graduated, I was down to around 135 pounds. Either I would be in the restroom because I had taken in milk, or I was in the restroom because my lactose intolerance wasn't actually lactose intolerance. It was ulcerative colitis. With ulcerative colitis, if you do not know, your intestines, especially your colon, becomes ulcerated and you bleed. And you bleed in ways that you didn't know at the age of 18 that you could bleed. And you certainly didn't think you could do so as a guy. And bleeding when you go to the bathroom was not a fun experience. The resolve for it was also not fun, which was, well, whatever this is, according to the doctor, let's just take some iron supplements and that will help with the depletion in blood. That does not help. That burns like holy hell, if you want to know the truth. And to this day, I refuse to take an iron supplement all by itself. Moving forward a couple of years, I had just turned 21. I was newly married. I had a 10-month-old son, had not started to walk yet. And I got a phone call from my dad, who told me that my mom was in Lutheran Hospital. She was not feeling well. They couldn't figure out the source of her pain. And that he encouraged me to come up and visit. And I can distinctly remember I was exhausted that night. I did not want to go up and visit my mom. Of all things, why should I drive up to Fort Wayne? She'll be fine. She'll be there overnight. They'll figure out what the story is. She'll, you know, if she has to be there longer, fine. I'll come up when I can. But I did go. Something called me to go. And I went to the hospital. And it was getting late, so I knew I couldn't stay long. But when I bent over to give my mom a kiss, and, you know, of course, hope all was well, I passed out. And I didn't leave the hospital for 45 days. I had just turned 21 just a couple of days prior, and my life was pretty full. But again, I had totally ignored what had been happening to my own body. Blood was now coming at a rapid rate. I constantly worked so that I could constantly avoid the conversation of what was happening to my body. Again, I was not in a healthy place. If you looked at me then, you would see like chipmunk type cheeks, yet there were other parts of my body that were probably grotesquely thin, and then my abdomen was rather large. It was a very strange combination of effects. So I kiss my mom and I pass out. And if you ever wonder if there is something out there looking out for you, maybe my story can help you feel convinced that something is. I call that something God. I have no proof, but I have faith that God looked out for me that night, that God said, listen, this is something that's beyond your control. This is something that you need to finally let go and let God handle it. For the first 30 days that I was in the hospital in 1992 with a 10-month-old and a new marriage, for those first 30 days, I was on complete bowel rest. They had sewn in a bag of hypoalimentation, and I'll never forget the name because it took me a good week to learn how to pronounce it. And that's what fed my system and kept me full for the first 30 days. The hope was to heal my bowel, heal that ulcerative colitidness, if I can coin a phrase, and maybe I could keep my colon. Maybe I wouldn't have to undergo any major surgery. Those maybes ran out. And again, my question wasn't why me, but it was why. What else could we do? Why does this have to be the case? And I remember distinctly my doctor, Dr. Glenn Goldstein, said, listen, man, here's your why. You have two options. And you can keep asking the whys. And I'll try to keep answering them. But your two options are, do you want to live or do you want to die? Those are the only two things you need to consider. Well, at 21, I wasn't feeling as though dying was an option I wanted to tend with. So I said, I want to live. And he said, okay, then you're going to have this surgery. And the surgery was to create an ileostomy. There are several types of ostomies. But an ileostomy means that they are going to go in and remove your entire large intestine, what's called the colon. So for those that have had a colostomy, that means there's still a portion of their colon intact. Mine was completely ulcerated, top to bottom. It had kind of deteriorated to the point where it was poisoning me, clearly. And so I needed to have that taken out. And they did. Now, it was his intent that that would be something rather temporary, and it was. They created a J pouch, which is a turning of the small intestine into a pouch that kind of looks like the letter J. They carve it all out, and they create an internal bag, basically. And that bag gets reattached to the muscles in your rectum and allows you to use the restroom just like regular folks. So nobody knows any difference. But it was going to be a six-month process before I could use that. And I knew that there was another surgery coming up. Now, before I move further, I want to address what happened to my mom. Because that late evening, when I bent over to give her a kiss and wish her well, and then passed out, and I remember seeing lights as I went down the hallway, you know, as though I was in some sort of episode of ER or whatever the case might have been. But I didn't see her again because she went home the next morning and whatever it was that was ailing her had suddenly disappeared. Now, you and I can sit down and have a philosophical discussion, but that's all the evidence I need to know that there was God in that place, in that moment. And God got me there through getting my mother sick and then healing her and sending her home so that she could tend to the rest of her family. This was my lot, and I never asked why me. So I got the ileostomy, and after 6 months, it was reversed. And I was able to use that J pouch for exactly 20 years. In that time, I had varying shades of success with it. I had times when I would bleed, but I didn't get worked up over it because I knew that that was just a part of my condition. In 2008, after having three beautiful boys, and after having divorced my first wife, I had just started into a brand new marriage with my wife, Maggie. And we were not newlyweds at this point. However, we were still getting to know each other from a health perspective. And this was certainly an area that was always sensitive to me. I never wanted her to have to sign up and be a part of this. But in 2008, we received a diagnosis after, again, I started to lose weight, just shedding pounds left and right. And it reminded me very much of the time in 1989 when I had lost all of that weight in a very short period of time. In 08, I had shed roughly 40 pounds in the equivalent of 28 to 30 days, and it was scary. I mean, hey, I looked good, don't get me wrong, but it was scary enough that, again, we sought counsel from a doctor, and the doctor, after looking at my distended liver, called for some testing. And in that testing, he discovered what was called primary sclerosing cholangitis. We simply call it PSC, primary sclerosing cholangitis. And it was a congenital liver disease that ultimately will claim the life of most everyone who has it, unless they're fortunate enough to get a liver transplant. So our hope was that I would get to a point where I could get a liver transplant. The disease, however, had a half-life, if you will, of roughly 2 to 4 years. And not knowing how long mine was in play, we really weren't able to gauge how much longer I had. But it was, for all intents and purposes, a death sentence. I was transferred down to IU Medical Center, where I had an amazing doctor, still continue to have him to this day, Dr. Marwan Gabril, who said, this is not a death sentence. This is a life sentence, and we're going to work with this disease, and we're going to kick its butt. And we're going to put you on the liver transplant list as soon as we possibly can. And he did. And I remained on that list for several years. But for 4 years in, I was still feeling pretty good. I was feeling pretty good. Feeling well, as you were. But I wasn't. In fact, that J pouch had deteriorated to the point where it now was poisoning my body. And the transplant committee for my liver said that if I wanted to get a liver, I would have to get rid of my J pouch. Thus again, I'm faced with why. Why did my body choose to turn on me again? Again, notice, I'm not saying why me. In that 20 years, I had lived through a lot of why me's and chose not to engage in any of them. So I certainly wasn't going to engage in this one. But I did ask those questions. Why is this now the case? Why wouldn't this happen later? Why didn't we consider another option? Healthy wise. But at the end of the day, after all of those whys were satisfied, I was left with the option of discovering this needed to go, or else I was not going to make it much longer. And so we decided to have it removed, the J pouch, on July 24th, 2012. That was probably the scariest moment of my life. Quite honestly, of all the other surgeries before and since, that was the one that scared me the most because I chose that date. It was completely elective to have it done then. And it was different than not having a choice. In the case of health, sometimes I don't want a choice. Because if given the choice, the natural human thing to do is to start saying, why me? And I didn't want to do that. So I remember distinctly crying on the way into surgical and saying to my wife, I wasn't sure I was going to live through that surgery. But again, God had a different plan. And I did live through that surgery, and it was a terribly difficult surgery. Now, to manage my pain before that surgery, but after the diagnosis of PSC, I was put on OxyContin. But I refused to take more than 5 milligrams in a single week, and I would always take it on a Wednesday night. And it would do well, you know, Tuesday of the next week, I knew, boy, oh boy, I'm starting to struggle. Come on Wednesday so that I can take my 5 milligrams. When I woke up from my surgery in 2012 for the ileostomy, I was on 10 milligrams of OxyContin every 3 hours. Now, again, let's look at that. 5 milligrams once a week to 10 milligrams every 3 hours. And that was a regimen I followed for weeks. If you know much about OxyContin, it is as addictive, if not more addictive, than heroin. It's a legal drug, and as we've all recognized over the last few years, there's been a major crackdown on doctors who overprescribe that medication. Mine certainly didn't give it to me in hopes that he was going to create a functioning addict, but unfortunately, that's what he did. Next time, I'll share with you what that addiction looked like. But for now, let me say that this is something that I think is a healthy part of me that I question whether I need to let it go. And if I'm letting it go, what is it that I am letting go? Am I letting go of the why? Or have I carried this why me with me for 20 some odd years, going on 30 years, and I still haven't processed it enough or figured it out enough to let it go? Have you had situations like that in your own life? Where maybe we act as though we're okay, but we're not. Where maybe we outwardly express one ideal, but in our own heads, we're going mad over the idea that we're broken. And what does that brokenness look like? And how do we heal? This is part of the art of letting go. This is the part that's hard to understand. And this is the part that makes me just like everybody else. No one's special. But certainly there are special qualities about me. And there are special qualities about you, I know. I don't have to know you personally to know that. You've made it this far in life. You are an overcomer. So many of you are a survivor. So why is it so hard for us to let go of things? There's an art to it, and I want to discover it. But I know that I'm at a point now where I cannot do that alone. Maybe you can help. I'd love to continue this idea in the next episode, and I would love for you to join me. But I would not like to go beyond this 30-minute period per episode unless the topic depends solely on doing so. I think it best that I share my story over time so that you can get to know me. And in return, I would love your feedback as well. And so I want you to feel free to reach out to me on social media and tell me your feelings. Did you enjoy this episode? Would you like to hear more on my own struggles? And would doing so help you in some way? In doing so, are you feeding my own emotional addictions, or is this a way to finally help me get past those? These are all wonderful questions. And I truly hope that they're questions that you have for yourself as well. So until next time, let me say happy World Ostomy Day. My ostomy saved my life. Not once, but twice. I wear mine proudly. And I'll share with you as we go more stories about not only my ileostomy, but my liver transplant 3 years later, and how I overcame at least the chemical dependencies and addictions in my life, but how those led to my emotional addictions. So join me again. I would love for you to take this journey with me on the art of letting go. Until next time, I'm James Steensma. Hey guys, it's James Steensma. Would you like to learn more about ostomies? There are millions of us walking around with them. And no, most of the time you can't tell who we are. That's because of the work of people like the United Ostomy Association of America. So go check them out at ostomy.org, OSTOMY, and you'll learn about colostomies, urostomies, and my favorite, the ileostomy. Also, friends, if today or any day you are struggling with a crisis, maybe like my own, where you are finding yourselves in the grips of addiction or depression, or you just need someone to talk to, I encourage you to text the crisis text line 741-741, and you will have free 24/7 support at your fingertips. That's 741-741, the crisis text line. Until next time, I am James Steensma. Thanks for joining me here on The Art of Letting Go.